According to the National Center for Drug Abuse, over 165 million Americans ages 12 and up are currently abusing drugs or alcohol. Of those 165 million Americans, there is a mom, dad, sister, brother, wife, husband, son, daughter, or grandparent praying and pleading that they would stop. Addiction is a subject most people don't like to talk about and is kept behind closed doors. But the Finding Hope podcast will bring light to the subject and give families that are living in shame, guilt, hopelessness, fear, worry, and anger tools and education to find strength, peace, happiness, joy, and hope. Hello, I'm Amy LaRue, Finding Hope Coordinator for Hope is Alive Ministries and your host for this Finding Hope podcast. At Hope is Alive, our mission is to radically change the lives of drug addicts, alcoholics, and those who love them. We do this through our intentional next level sober living homes and faith-based support groups for the loved ones of addicts called Finding Hope. Thank you for joining us today. Before we begin, I want to remind you that on September 7th, Finding Hope presents Run for Hope, formerly known as our sobriety sprint. This event will have both in-person and virtual options. This is a family-friendly event to honor those we have lost and spread hope to our communities. You can learn more or register, sponsor, or honor your loved one at runforhoperace.com. But today I'm so excited. I'm sitting down with Ms. Haley Twyman Brack. And I first met you, Haley, at a coalition that different mental health people come together to learn from one another, collaborate, and just to learn from each other, right? And to know what's available here in Oklahoma City. And so I'll never forget, like, I was quickly drawn to your positivity, your knowledge, and just your passion to want to help so many people and to help others. And so I'm so excited you're here. So welcome, Haley.
Thank you so much. And I feel the same about you. Ever since we first met for coffee and we got to know each other, I've been really drawn to you and your passion for Hope is Alive. So thank you for having me today.
Yes. So how are you doing?
I'm very well. Okay. I'm caffeinated, motivated. It's a great Thursday.
Well, good. I'm so glad. How's your summer going? Do you guys have big plans for the summer?
So this summer, I am really excited because I am finally getting a pass for Arcadia Lakes kayaking. And so I'm going to make it a point as part of my self-care journey. Every Friday, I'm going to go kayaking for a couple of hours. So that's my goal.
That's fun. Do you own your own kayak?
I don't, but Arcadia Lake in Edmond has a pass for $150, unlimited kayaking. And so that's what my summer plans are, just to go have some adventure on the water and enjoy nature and just be present. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, that sounds so fun. What a great opportunity. And I love that it's like, okay, I'm going to take this time and invest back in myself, do something I love and passionate about. So tell our listeners a little bit about yourself.
So I'm a licensed professional counselor here in the state of Oklahoma, and so I work for an agency called Edmond Counseling and Professional Development. Through Edmond Counseling, I am also the Director of Education and Outreach for the Oklahoma Counseling Institute. And through the Oklahoma Counseling Institute, or OCI, we provide continuing education for mental health professionals, and we also do educational seminars for folks who aren't clinicians too. And so our biggest thing that we're passionate about is making sure that we provide quality evidence-based education for folks and to make sure that we provide resources not only for clinicians, but for the public in general. And so something we really love to do is, you know, even though we have paid for trainings, we also have a free database of all the resources from our old training. So that way, if a clinician or a candidate or someone who's in graduate school really wants to tailor their training, we have this huge free database that folks can visit and learn from. And so we're really passionate not only about educating folks, but just being able to be part of the mental health community and helping new clinicians or retired clinicians or, you know, seasoned clinicians just to be able to develop their skill set and better serve folks.
And you just recently, we got to be a part, we got to be there as a vendor. You have this conference you do every year. And like, tell us a little bit about that. How did it go this year?
Oh my goodness. It was the largest and I think most fun conference we've had yet. So this was our third annual Summer Super Summit. Okay. And this year, we are very grateful to be able to host the American Psychological Association President, Dr. Deborah Kawahara, and the ACA President, American Counseling Association President, Dr. Edel Torres Rivera, as our keynote speakers. And so our attendance was very large. And what I really like about it, I always tell Micah, I feel like the Summer Super Summit is like my summer camp. Because every year, all my friends get together. I got to see you. I got to see Holly. I got to see a lot of old colleagues and, you know, folks who come every year just to our summit. It's wonderful to get to see new faces and old faces, and everyone gets together because it's a continuing education conference, you know, so clinicians are coming there to, you know, get their hours, make sure they can renew their license. But we also have a lot of events that we do that really, we try to foster communities. We have networking events with, you know, mocktails and massages and live music. And so people can get together and really get to know each other, because we really want to foster that community as well. Because what I really like about our organization is that we never see other counseling agencies as rivals. Like, we're all working together. Yeah. And so we really want to make sure that we're developing that space for clinicians to be able to reach out, connect, collaborate, and learn what else is out there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I didn't tell you this. You're busy, but all going all around. When people came up, I'd always say, do you know what Finding Hope is? And talk to them through it. And one connection I made, you know, I was really hoping to connect a lot with these clinicians just for their clients, right? That was my, I don't want to say purpose, but I was like, this is going to be such a great opportunity so that when they have someone that comes into their office and they just need, maybe their loved one's struggling, or they might be struggling, or they've lost someone, that here's another resource. But I actually connected with a lady, and she lives in Tulsa, and she needed it not as a clinician, that as a loved one.
Oh my goodness.
And then she's gotten connected in the Tulsa area to some of our groups out there. And so it's just like, okay, like some of the fruit, you know, so thank you for the opportunity and for us being there. So thank you for that.
Thank you so much for joining us. I'm so happy that a great connection came of that. My goodness. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. So you're a clinician, you're a counselor. So, you know, I remember when we sat down, you mentioned that coffee meeting. When we sat down, I shared my story and you just kind of shared yours. And you talked about, and I always like, what are you passionate about? Because usually what I have found, you can correct me if I'm wrong, is there's something that you're passionate about, right? And that you go after. And you started talking to me about trauma. And I'm like, oh my gosh, that's so good, right? And so I was really drawn to you that you do a lot of work with people that are going through trauma. So why don't you share a little bit about that?
Absolutely. And so my journey with counseling actually began as a client myself.
Okay.
And so whenever I first went to college, I always knew that something was wrong. Like I couldn't quite put my finger on it, because growing up in rural Western Oklahoma, there really wasn't resources, especially at that time. Yeah. This was before the advent of telehealth. We had the only psychiatrist in a 200-mile radius.
Wow.
It was unreal just how limited the resources were. And so, of course, I had no idea what really mental health was. And so I go to college and I just knew that something wasn't right. And so I went to my first therapy session. And that therapy session really changed my life. I ended up going to therapy. I'm still a client. So I have a different therapist now, but if a client ever asked me, you know, have you been to therapy? I'm like, yes, you have a grand therapist.
Yes.
I check in with her every month. But going there as a client, it really showed me how much therapy can help. And then being in my first psychology class in undergrad, I had a professor who came in and was very hands-on with us as students, which is really rare for a psychology 101. Mm-hmm. He actually wanted us to learn. I remember one day he came
he
in.
He wanted you to learn.
He wanted us to learn. It was incredible. Wild how that works. But he came in and he started teaching the class, and he got a phone call and said, I have to go. And he left. So seeing him prioritizing his client, like, it was important for him to help. That really motivated me and inspired me to want to get into the helping field as well. And so since then, I worked in community mental health for a couple of years, working with kiddos who are in foster care. So working a lot with kiddos who have gone through trauma. And in my current position, I work primarily with adults and some adolescents experiencing trauma and anxiety related disorders.
And so if someone's out there, like, I've heard it, and you can correct me, like, we have big T's and little T's, but to me, big traumas and little traumas, I need to make sure people understand that. But to me, I feel like even those little traumas can weigh you down and affect you mentally and all of that, your mental health. So if someone like has experienced trauma, what would you advise or educate someone that's going through trauma or has been through trauma that they just haven't worked through? What would you tell somebody?
Absolutely. And so I always like to say before I really talk about clinical matters that anything that I talk about here should be really for educational purposes only. I do not want you to take any of this as medical or mental health advice. I've never met you, so I'm afraid I can't assess you. But if you ever do need a clinician, I really recommend reaching out to Psychology Today. Psychology Today has a great database, or Therapy Couch too is a great database for folks to find their own clinicians. So don't take anything that I say today as advice for yourself, but just for education. But, you know, when it comes to trauma, we think about trauma and, you know, what often comes to folks' mind is, you know, combat veterans or those who've been victims of sexual assault, which that is trauma. But trauma itself, it's an anxiety-related disorder. If you open up the DSM-5, the Diagnostical and Statistical Manual for Mental Health Conditions, it's in the anxiety-based section. And so whenever we think about trauma, you know, we might think about, you know, flashbacks, we might think about distressing dreams, but trauma can also look like anxiety too.
Very good. So help us understand that a little bit better. So, you know, I think when we always heard PTSD, to me, my brain personally went to the war, right? You know, that field and all of that, maybe EMTs or police, you know, those in response, you know, those that frontline people, right? But it's not. I'm so glad. So I want us to kind of, I don't want to say normalize it, but I want to give people a sense of, okay, like that is trauma and that I might need some help with that. So you kind of mentioned it. So what, you know, you said it comes out like anxiety. And I know a lot of us, especially those when we love someone that might be struggling with addiction, that to me, that was a trauma in my life. And I, you know, I didn't know what to do, or, you know, it built my anxiety. I got depressed, all those things. So what are some other things that might be trauma related that people might not think it is trauma?
Absolutely. And so, you know, you had mentioned the big T's and little T's. You know, I'm on the same page as you. There's much more than what is defined by the DSM-5 that can be traumatic. And if we look at the DSM-5, what we're seeing is, you know, have witnessed violence or have learned about violence or were in a situation where you're physically harmed, sexually assaulted, in a natural disaster. And those are all, of course, you know, traumatic experiences. But other things can be traumatic as well. Something that I've talked with parents about is that if we have a kiddo, and not for the parents' fault, this is not something the parents can necessarily control, but if a kiddo is having to move every year, and so we're losing those friendships, we're having to reestablish ourselves in a new school setting, you know, we're grieving the loss of those old, you know, social roles and social relationships, that can be traumatic. You know, verbal abuse can be traumatic as well, even though it's not listed in the DSM-5 as something that could meet criteria for PTSD as a criteria A. Verbal abuse, emotional abuse, those can lead to trauma. The loss through miscarriage, that is something that can be incredibly traumatic for folks as well. You mentioned, you know, going through addiction, stressful periods, you know, post-traumatic stress disorder, with a really big emphasis on stress. If we go through incredibly stressful periods of our life, whether or not they meet the criteria, quote unquote, what the DSM-5 says is trauma, they can be incredibly traumatic.
Yeah, absolutely. And you talked about the mental and verbal abuse can be trauma. And I think, you know, on our side, I think what I do, I hear that all the time. I actually was texting with a spouse last night. And my first question was, are you safe? Because I need to make sure you're safe. And she says, physically, yes. And so that took it as a sign. She's probably being verbally abused, you know, all those things. And so, you know, again, that's not something to shed light on either. Like that is internal. And we've talked about it. We had Julie Bessler on here and she talked about our thoughts and how that our thoughts can quickly turn to action if we're not careful. And some of that we can internalize and all of that. So if someone they think they've experienced trauma or they're slowly coming to like, oh, that was a traumatic time for me. What would you tell somebody? What should they do? Or how would you educate them on that?
Absolutely. And so, you know, when we look at trauma symptoms, there are many, many different ways that trauma can manifest. It can look like, you know, we have disturbing dreams. It could look like flashbacks. So flashbacks might be a moment in which you feel like you are experiencing the trauma all over again. It can look like intrusive memories. It can look like intrusive thoughts. It can also look like hypervigilance. So feeling like you're on edge, feeling like something bad's going to happen at any moment. It can look like doing things that are more risky than usual. It could look at thinking that the world's out to get us or thinking that we're terrible. It can look like many different things. And so if you feel like something is wrong, or you feel like something doesn't feel right, or if you even just have questions of, was this that I went through, is this a trauma? I would really encourage, you know, one, reach out to a trusted support, you know, whether that is a friend or family member, but it's also not a bad idea to reach out to a clinician too. You know, many mental health clinicians have free initial consultations too. Mm. And so if you're not ready to take that full step and dive into therapy, reach out and just meet with someone, ask a couple of questions. And that might provide some good direction as well.
And you said going on to Psychology Today is a great place to start with that. Because I get that question, like, where do I find? And I tell people, and correct me if I'm wrong, like, have that conversation. If you don't feel like you're a good fit with that, you know, it's not going to be a good fit on both sides. And it's okay. So just reach out and have that conversation and see. I even asked, so I have a counselor too. And I remember asking her, like, for me, it was really important that she was impacted by addiction of some sort, because that means she can relate better to me. And so I even asked her, how did addiction impact your life? And she was very open with me and shared that. And I'm like, okay, this is who I need to be with. Which is fun, because I actually saw her at your conference and was like, it's just kind of awkward because, you know, like, you can't, anyways, I was like, hi, she's like, hi then. But, so anyways, you know, to me, I think that's important, is to reach out. Like, don't let you stew in it, right? And I know there's different ways, like, that people can work through the trauma. So what are some things that you have, maybe if someone's listening and they want to talk to their counselor about it, what would you recommend how to work through that? Or maybe even, and then also let's do on the flip side, if they're not seeing a counselor, you know, I get the question, and you, this might be a good question for you. I can't afford counseling.
That is a very great question. I appreciate that. And so, you know, I can't necessarily provide specific recommendations on what the best module is, because there's a reason why there's lots of different modules for counseling, because it's not going to be the best fit for everyone. So for me personally, and in my journey, more talking therapy was more helpful for me in processing my past. But as a clinician, what I incorporate are a couple different ways. One is cognitive behavioral therapy that's trauma-informed, which involves identifying triggers to trauma symptoms. It involves talking about the trauma. It involves developing coping strategies. And then another direction I often go is called written exposure therapy. And so that one's a little more intense. It typically takes place over 5 sessions, but it's very structured, and it has very structured prompts that we lead the clients through writing about their trauma for 30 minutes. And we see a significant reduction in trauma symptoms often after that intervention. But there's lots of different ones too. So one that's really popular here in Oklahoma is EMDR. Mm-hmm. And EMDR, after the Murrah building bombing, a lot of clinicians got trained in EMDR. There was a big program that trained a lot of folks. And so if you are, you know, looking for a therapist and you see EMDR, that's also a trauma-based inventory.
So what is EMDR for those that don't know?
So EMDR is, I want to make sure, let's see, eye movement desensitization. I can't remember what the R stands for.
It's okay.
It's not one I work with. But that one is a common one that's used for trauma as well. But me personally, I found the most research to support the CBT and the written exposure therapy. But there are other models out there. And also talk therapy, too, can be helpful. But really, I would encourage folks not necessarily to look for the intervention. Like, don't necessarily look for EMDR. Don't necessarily look for CBT. But like you said, find a therapist that's a good fit, because if we're not able to trust that therapist or even personality, like we do free 20-minute consultations with folks who are looking for new therapists. And if it's not a personality fit, then it's going to be hard to want to build that rapport and open up to them. And so don't be afraid to shop around.
You have to be able to have that trust. Yeah.
So build that trust. So really what I encourage you to do is read their profiles, find someone who has a good fit, find someone who takes your insurance is helpful too. But then reach out and talk to them. See how you click. And if not, you know, most therapists, if you don't feel like they're a good fit, they'll help you find a good fit.
Yeah, absolutely. Or they're full. Like, or I get full. That, like, you know, oh, I was like, well, ask them who they would recommend.
Absolutely.
Because they would probably, whoever they're going to recommend, they would recommend to a family member.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's what I tell people when they like, who do you recommend? Well, this is where I would send my family, right? I wouldn't send somebody that I wouldn't send, you know, my family to. So what about those people? I can't afford it. It's too much. Even with a sliding scale or with insurance. I mean, it's expensive. And with insurance, it's a pretty penny. Like but for me, it's so important. Like, it's more important to do that than some other things. But what if for those who are listening and I get that all the time, what would you say?
So something that I really encourage folks, if you feel like you are in that spot where you need that support, you need that counseling, a lot of colleges offer free counseling to the general public.
Really?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
So whenever I was in graduate school at UCO, University of Central Oklahoma, we had the student clinic, and you're being seen by students. So they're not in practicum. They have not graduated yet. They don't have their license, but they have to, they're being observed by professors. They have to record a certain number of sessions and give them to their professors and make sure that they're developing their skills. So you are being overseen by a licensed professional, but UCO has a free clinic. University of Oklahoma, Tulsa, University of Tulsa as well has a free clinic. And even if they're not free, the most you're probably going to look at paying is like $10 a session.
So that's something, because I mean, we have listeners from all over. So look in your community. That's a new one that I'm going to remember. And that's so good. Like, yeah, they're learning and it's like, but they have someone over them.
Yes.
That they will collaborate with, and it will be a good way for them to learn as well as maybe a better route for you financially at that time. And who knows? I mean, I used to be a teacher and I would have student teachers come and they were phenomenal student teachers. Like, I'd be like, yeah, I would tell my principal, you need to hire this one. Or most of them were really good, but no, I would always be like, this is a really good one. And so, but again, I was there to oversee. I was there to give them the feedback. And the kids still got great quality teaching as they would probably in counseling as well. So thank you for that. Like that, I love that.
Absolutely. My first therapist that I had mentioned earlier at OSU was a student counselor. And so it literally changed my life.
That's so cool. Thank you for sharing that.
Absolutely.
We need to wrap it up here shortly, but what else would you want, you know, someone listening today, maybe they're going through something, you know, a lot of our listeners love someone either in addiction or their loved ones in recovery. And they do like have that PTSD with all of that. Or maybe they just aren't quite there yet. How would you encourage someone today?
Absolutely. And so I really feel like that the biggest thing that mitigates stress, that mitigates mental health concerns, that mitigates trauma is community.
Mm.
You know, if that is, you know, finding a therapist to build that relationship with the process things. I know I'm biased because I'm a therapist. I'm a therapist with a therapist. And I feel like, you know, many folks, whether or not you feel like you have gone through trauma, whether or not you feel like you can, you know, point that out as that was a traumatic experience. If you feel like something's off, or if you feel like anxiety is too high, if you feel like you just need that support, reach out to a therapist. If not a therapist, reach out to other communities too. Like, hope is alive. Mm-hmm. I know you all have a lot of resources for families as well. And so really the biggest thing with mental health is it thrives in silence. Mm-hmm. Mental health thrives or mental health conditions thrive when we're alone, when we're silent. And so if it's not therapy, then reach out to a support group, reach out to a trusted friend, just find that community. You know, I think back to whenever I was in graduate school in psychopharmacology, there was a study called Rat Park. Are you familiar with Rat Park?
I'm not.
So Rat Park was a study on addiction. And what they did is they had rats who were in Rat Park. So it has lots and lots of different toys. They had rats in Rat Park with lots of friends. They had rats in cages by themselves and rats in cages with no toys with another partner. They had cocaine water and they had regular water. What they found is that the rats who were by themselves were more likely to drink the cocaine water. Mm-hmm. If you had rats who were addicted to cocaine and you put them in Rat Park afterwards, they stopped drinking the cocaine water. Once they started to develop that community, those relationships with the other rats, they stopped seeking out the cocaine. And so that was a basis that really started the study on how much community and relationships can help us as a protective factor against addiction, against mental health concerns, but also in helping us to recover from addiction or mental health. And so it's find your community, which I know is easier said than done.
And I like what you said. I'm going to back up just a little bit. You said, if you feel off, like, listen to that. Don't let it get to the point where it's like, I can't get out of bed. I can't do this. I can't do this anymore. If you feel off, reach out. Like, it's okay. Like, we all understand. And what I'm going to say too is, like, social media makes everyone's life look perfect and beautiful, but behind social media, most people's lives are not that beautiful and perfect. Or the influencers you might follow on social media aren't always, and that's just a tidbit of their life. So, but if you feel off, don't, I love that. Like, reach out. And so I like to leave my listeners with a challenge. And so after listening to you today, some of the challenges I'm going to ask people, I'm going to challenge you. If you feel off, if you have been on the edge of wanting to seek more help, clinical help, to please look out, reach out, go to Psychology Today. I've actually looked at that as well, just for different things. And I read it. I actually go through and read it and see, okay, what's our specialty? It also lists insurance, if I'm correct, right?
Yes, it does. Okay. Insurance, religion, you can filter many, many different considerations.
Yeah. So go on there. I'd also encourage you to stay connected to the community. As Haley said, like, it's so important that we are part of this community, that we can lean on each other and understand, like, we're not alone in this, that others are going through what you might be going through or have been going through it. And so continue to stay connected to our communities. So thank you so much for joining us today. And thank you guys out there for joining us. And you can learn more about Finding Hope at findinghope.today. But before you go, we would love for you to give us a 5-star review, share this on social media, and subscribe to this podcast so you don't miss our next hope-filled episode. Thanks again for joining me, Amy LaRue, and our special guest, Miss Haley, on this episode of Finding Hope. And remember, you are not alone. It's not your fault. There is hope.